the winning sound of Network Sports.
And a very pleasant good evening to you, and welcome to another very special edition of Mason and Guests, heard on Voice of Barbados 92.9 FM. You can call us at 434-1790. You can send us a WhatsApp at 253-4679 or an email at cricketmason@yahoo.com. Mason and Guests is brought to you in association with the very good friends at Barbados Lottery, promoting youth sport and culture.
It's time to scratch your ticket. Scratch and you could win it.
Chance to cash in on big winnings for 2020 with the newest $10 scratch ticket from the Barbados Lottery. Purchase a cash-in ticket today for your chance to win up to $100,000 and to double or even triple your winnings on each ticket. So play and win big with cash-in from the Barbados Lottery.
Barbados Lottery.
The West Indies team arriving in England for three test matches. Yes, a lot of talk about whether the tour should come off. Some of the greats say no, we should not go. But of course, we had negotiations. The parties certainly had some tough negotiations. In the final analysis, they decided yes, and the West Indies players arriving sometime this morning, our time, and we wish them well. That, of course, is going to be very much the topic of discussion. We also want to take a look at the side. In fact, last week we had Roger Harper, the lead selector. He's going to come and join us, and he'll no doubt be a little bit later on talking about his reasons for some of the picks that we've had. A lot of talk there in Guyana about Vasami Pomol not making it. In fact, the GCB not happy at all. And where he's from in Berbice, one of the three counties in that wonderful country, the president of the Berbice Cricket Association saying, oh no, Vasami Pomol should be very much a part of the squad. But he's not there, and I'm sure he's wondering why. So perhaps when we hear from Roger Harper, we can ask him that question as well. As usual, we're going to be going around the Caribbean, and we also want to go to England to talk to Johnny Baran. We hope to link with him at around 6:30 or so. And of course, we want to go up to Jamaica and talk to Wayne Lewis as well. And we're going to go to Dominica. In fact, we want to get some of the young bucks in, if one case to describe it like that. And Shane Shillingford, the former West Indies off-spinner, consented to come along to offer his thoughts as well. Now, yesterday, just around 12:30 Barbados time, I was able to speak to Floyd Lamont Reefer, who, as you know, is the batting coach, for this time in terms of the West Indies game up in England for those three test matches. And no doubt we would be talking to him. In fact, I recorded an interview, and we will be talking to him a little bit later on the show. But without any further ado, let's go to Antigua and talk to a great man. Of course, Sir Andy Roberts, who's on the line already. Sir Andy, how are you this evening?
Good evening, Andrew. Good evening. Good evening to your listening public. I am fine.
Good. And of course, Dr. Andrew Ford, a very good friend, is on the line. We've got a doctor. We've got a sir. Hello, doctor. How are you?
Good night, Andrew and Sir Andy.
Good night, Doc. How are you?
I'm fine.
Yes.
We have a great show as usual.
Yes, of course. Sir Andy, the players have arrived. Are you happy?
Well, it's neither here nor there. But
what do you mean by that?
Well, it's neither here nor there. What I think doesn't really count all that much. But I don't have a problem with them negotiating to go to England.
Mm-hmm.
But what I have a problem with is that their talks about West Indies is not going to benefit from this tour financially, which I think should be a mistake. Because the chances that we are going to take, I don't think much more countries are willing to take that chance. And there are also rumors, you know, that one of the reasons why West Indies undertake this tour is because they got a loan of £3 million from the ECB sometime.
I heard that.
Yeah, but I think Now, I don't think that should be a loan. That should be a gift to the West Indies Cricket Board for the chance they're willing to take.
Explain that, Sandy.
We are taking chances that nobody else is willing to take. And why we're taking that chance is to save England at least £380 million. Because if no one goes to England, they have to pay back that money there. And so they're not willing to pay it back. So why should we be a guinea pig, go and sacrifice ourselves for nothing? And if the cricket board indeed got the loan and they find themselves in a bind, they should come and explain to the public, this is the reason why we have to undertake that tour. Don't just sit back and allow us to speculate. You know, I would, you know, more or less have sympathy on them because the financial bind that they're in right now. So they're willing to do that. But I think West Indies should have benefit from this tour financially, not just the £3 million, but I think to save England £380 million. You know, that's a lot of savings.
So, Sir Andy, you don't support the tour then? Is that what you're saying?
I said if they're going to benefit financially
from the tour,
that's not a problem. If they're not going to benefit from it, you know, then I have a problem. Why take the risk and sacrifice the guys for it?
Doctor, you have anything to say to Sandy before we go on?
No, I respect Sandy's opinion. I believe that living in a COVID-19 world is something that we all have to navigate and to master. No vaccine is on the horizon for the next 6 months or more. And I believe playing sport is a question that's being battled with all sporting federations. There's football as we know it, there's NBA, the NFL, baseball. Every sport is trying to figure out how to navigate the COVID-19 world and to do it safely. The important thing is medical security and also the biosecurity of the tour. Once everyone follows the protocols and there are no infringements or any people entering who have already been tested and are negative and they keep to themselves, the tour medically will be quite safe. It's just that the atmosphere won't be there of the crowds and that sort of thing. Anytime we make an overseas tour, we don't really benefit that much. We have to pay all the match fees and the benefits go to the host through the marketing and all the broadcast rights, and you know, I think our chance will come. I believe that Pakistan will go to the UK and India for sure, because the Indian tour is much bigger and is the one that most people look forward to financially, especially when India visits someone at home. So the question, I guess, what Andy is saying, the question that Andy is posting is right now June the right time, or should it be later on? But once it's set up and we can get there and get back and go through the quarantines, go through the testing, keep the biosecurity the way it should be, I believe the tour will go off without a hitch. Of course, if some misfortune were to occur that because of breaches an individual test positive for COVID-19, that would be a catastrophic blow and would cause a lot of questions to be asked, and the confidence in the process would be shaken. So the tour is important in that it's kind of a pioneer COVID-19 experience, and the execution will depend on cooperation from the players and everyone that's involved, down to the groundsmen, every single individual. And the weakest link would be the thing that would put the tour in jeopardy. But if everyone that's concerned, the collective, would stick to the plans, I think that it will go off well. Our players are rather young, and they need the experience of playing in England. It's a team that we want to build for the future. I mean, and they really need this experience of playing in those conditions and playing against some top-class bowling, because we do know, even though our test bowling is good, the bowling otherwise may not be that good. So I'm wishing them good luck.
Sandy, you heard the opening bowling from Dr. Ford. Do you agree with him?
Well, that's his opinion, and we all have our own opinions. Right? But as I say, at this time, if we are not going to benefit financially, I don't see that we should be the first to go.
No, Sir Andy, let's look at the squad. The fact of the matter is that they are there. 25 cricketers picked. You like the squad, Sir Andy?
Well, who am I to complain about the squads that the selectors choose? You know, I look at it and I see there some names that are called, and I'm wondering why. We could have done better in some instances. And I'm listening around the region, and people are still complaining about their guy not getting in. It is not about West Indies as far as some countries are concerned. It's about my country, my countryman. I would like to see my countryman in the team. And so that's a problem.
Now, when you look at this, the squad, though, you got Holder, Brathwaite, Hope, Chase, Durridge, Blackwood, Brooks, Cornwall, Bonner, Joseph, Holder, that's Shamar, of course, is Jason at the top. You got Campbell, Raymond Reefer, and Kemah Roach. You think it's a good 14-man squad? Sandy?
Hi. No, Andrew. You know, there's one name that I haven't heard anybody call, and I think that we should try to get this guy to play red ball cricket.
Who's that?
Because it will be better for him, Nicholas Puran.
Okay.
It will be better for him in the long run. It will help his game.
Mm-hmm. Yes. What about the selection of Raymond Reefer?
Andrew, that's one of the names that people are talking about. Well, they probably know why they choose Raymond Reefer. Is it to bowl steadily from one end, or they think because he's left-armer, he will make a difference? What is Raymond's strength? Is his strength depend a lot on swing or containment? These are some of the things that we need to look at.
One
name that surprised me, the first announcement of the squad that wasn't there, was O'Shane Thomas.
Right.
I now see they bring him into the 25.
Right.
But I'm not sure if he's in the 15 or...
No. He's a reserve. They've got 14 in the squad, but there are 11 reserves.
11 reserves, 14 in the squad. Well, his name should wander pencil down a lot more at the top.
Okay, so you're saying, Sir Andy, that you would have put him in the 15-man squad. Is that what you're saying? It's 14.
From the 14, he should be there from the onset.
Okay.
He should be there from the onset.
Why? Why, though?
Because he has what others want. He has pace.
Yeah.
And everybody wants pace. He may not be a wicket taker, but he may create some problems for the opposition, and that is what you want. Sometimes it's not the guy who gets the wickets, you know. It's the guy who creates the problem, allows the other man to get wickets.
Now, in terms of Shannon Gabriel, he is in the reserves list. He hasn't played for close to a year. Now, would you have picked him?
Has he played any cricket at all?
No.
Bowl a few balls by himself? Has he done that?
Well, he's been training very hard.
Yeah, training very hard and bowling are two different things.
That's true too, yeah. So what about Craig Brathwaite? Would you have carried him?
Based upon what? His past record?
Which in the last 2 years is not very good.
Right, or the last outings that he have in the professional setup.
Right.
What are you? Why are you taking him?
So
his past record don't show much.
So you would not have carried Craig Brathwaite?
I'm not a selector.
Now, I note with interest that Nkuma Bonner has gotten into the mix-up. Did that surprise you, Sir Andy?
Yeah, we see we're picking people based upon what they've done recently,
right?
And not the history.
Mm-hmm. Okay, interesting, interesting. So overall. When we look at the West Indies players going to England, do you think that, despite your concerns, that they may compete and could win it, could win the series?
Well, that would be great.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they have to work very hard.
Mm-hmm.
They have to pull out no stops at all. But it's difficult for me to pinpoint who. You know, is going to blossom on that tour.
Mm-hmm.
The last two times that Shea Hope went to England, he performed creditably.
Mm-hmm.
The last two times, the World Cup and the series before that. He was the only player you could say that, you know, and with his head held high in both instances.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I see. Right. Do you think we should be playing for the Wisden Trophy, Sandy?
But why are we playing?
Mm.
It's now West Indies versus England.
Mm-hmm.
And when West Indies meet England, it's not the Wisden Trophy they play for.
But people here on the WhatsApp are asking if we should be playing.
Well, if you're not going to play for the Wisden Trophy, then why go?
Mm-hmm.
I guess that a lot of people don't want West Indies to lose the Wisden Trophy. But what if they create a miracle and win the series?
Mm.
Would say that they retain the Wisden Trophy.
Mm-hmm. So Andy, you don't seem too optimistic, though.
And are you optimistic?
That's a good question, Sir Andy. The side is such an unpredictable side that you never know. I think the batting is going to be of great concern. I think we may hold our own in terms of the bowling, but the batting is so unpredictable. In fact, you're carrying a couple of openers, and you made a point earlier. Campbell has not made runs recently. Craig Brathwaite hasn't made runs recently. You know, when you look at a Shea Hope, you know, he hasn't done all that well in Test cricket in recent times. So I'm concerned about the batting, Sandy.
Well, if you're concerned about the batting, then you're concerned about the team.
Yes, I agree.
You know, I think this time is tough. And at least I am hoping that we can find at least one or two players from that tour who can go on to become... You know, household names in
right.
The West Indies and around the world.
Mm-hmm. Doctor, any questions for your good friend, Sandy?
Well, Sir Andy, what is the key to being successful bowling in England as a fast bowler?
You got to bowl within yourself in England, because England is not noted for fast pitches. But one thing in England is that you get more bunks in some grounds than you do in the West Indies. And as long as the bowlers bowl within themselves and don't try to do too much, then I think that one or two of the youngsters can come out, you know, creditably on the tour. Okay. There's another factor, even in the reserve. I see some names in the reserves that maybe had it not been for the coronavirus, we would probably not see those names.
That's true. So you agree with the philosophy of Curly Ambrose, that consistency and not trying to do too much, but trying to keep the ball in on that good line and length with the odd surprise short ball is really the key.
Well, West Indies seldom bowl short ball these days, so I don't know much about the odd short ball. I think one factor that I've seen that's disturbing in West Indies cricket,
yes,
is that we bowl too much ball six inches outside the off stump.
Okay.
Right, and that seemed to be the trend, that just bowl outside off stump, hit it outside off stump. But then, we all know, majority of Englishmen will just sit back and wait.
Right.
You know, I think we need to be a little more attacking. You know, even though you're bowling within yourself, attack the off stump, not too much outside off stump.
Mm-hmm.
I think that has gone away from our line of attack. Too much outside off stump and not more on off stump.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to get wickets.
So you wouldn't believe in having the third man early, and you believe in having the flips early and seeing how things go?
Early on, I prefer slips to third man. So if we're looking wickets, third man might not help you if you don't have somebody that's genuinely fast and people are uppercutting. That's the only way third man will help you.
Right, right.
But slips, you need the slips, and you bowl the ball and off stump, allow the batsman to play, not leave alone, to play. And 6 inches outside off stump is not playing.
Mm-hmm. Well, Sandy,
why do you think?
Sorry.
That we don't have an out-and-out swing bowler like a James Anderson in the West Indies generally?
Well, I don't know. Because, you see, a lot of people believe that it's the pitch that helps you to do these things. No, it's not the pitch. You have got to develop yourself in order to bowl in-swing, out-swing.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me as though most West Indians bowl more in-swing than out-swing.
Mm-hmm. I see. Mm-hmm.
You can go, Andrew.
Well, Sandy, I want to thank you for talking to us. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. And let's hope that the guys can certainly do well. I know you've got your concerns. Let's hope they can bring the bacon home. I think the odds are stacked very heavily against them, but let's wish them well.
Well, I think some of them are thrown to the wolves.
Oh dear!
But I'm just hoping that good sense may prevail, and that they use this as a learning opportunity for especially the reserves.
Mm-hmm. All right, Sandy. Enjoy the rest of your evening and stay indoors, huh?
Andrew, I'm already indoors. I'm not like you. Andrew, one of the other thing that I would like to say to you, I think that you should be more forceful.
Right.
You know, when you're talking to some players, and try to keep away from the chairman and selectors, because you know the answer that you're going to get.
I like that. Oh, dear. Well, the chairman, okay, he's coming on pretty soon, so please just note for the chairman. Thanks, Andy.
Okay, all right.
All right. Let's go to England and talk to Johnny Boran. Johnny, how are you, my friend, the noted journalist? How are you, my friend?
Ah, Andrew, yes, very well, very well. Lovely to join you again. It's been a while.
Yes, were you at the airport to meet the guys this morning in your mask?
Yeah, it's fantastic to have the West Indies here. As you know, that obviously the whole world's been in lockdown. There hasn't been a lot of sport. There hasn't been a lot of cricket, to be perfectly honest. We've actually seen horse racing has returned behind closed doors. We have snooker behind closed doors. We, of course, have the Premier League starting up on the 17th of June. But from my perspective and a lot of people here, especially after the incredible 2019 that we witnessed and the start of this year as well, it's just great to have Test cricket back. And we're as a nation, I have to say, as a sporting entity, to say we're grateful to have the West Indies who have come over. Especially, they've obviously rearranged the tour. It's incredible. It's a wonderful gesture from the West Indies, and we're very much looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm. A lot of talk, I would imagine, in England about the tour. Lots of excitement.
Yeah, there is. I mean, it's an incredibly strange time here. Things are starting to get not back to normal. We're still under a lockdown, but restrictions have been eased. You're allowed out of the house. Not just for sort of essential movements and travel. You can travel to beaches. You can meet up with people in gardens. You're still not allowed in other people's houses. You can't share cars. You know, you're not allowed meetings above six people in public places. You have to observe social distancing. I mean, it is still very much a sort of nation that's paralyzed, if you like. So just to have the idea of a three-test series against the West Indies coming up on the 8th of July is just manna from heaven. It's fantastic news.
Absolutely. Before Dr. Ford comes in, what kind of team you think we get in terms of the England side? Can you tell us?
Yeah, I mean, I think you'll see a lot of the usual suspects. There's one doubt actually hanging over Joe Root, who's expecting the birth of his second child. And the timing of that could well time with the start of the first test, or at some stage during the series. So there's a possibility he might obviously be at the birth of his second child, understandably. So there might be changes there. Otherwise, I think you'll see a lot of the personnel that did so well in the South African tour, of course, that England went 1-0 down and then came back and finished the series really strongly. So you'll see, you know, hopefully the likes of Mark Wood, you know, coming back into the side after his very strong showing when he last played against the West Indies in St. Lucia. But a lot of the usual suspects that have played Test cricket for England in the last 18 months. And of course, you know, the bulk of that side that you saw in the West Indies last year will be there. Johnny Bairstow will be probably looking to try and force his way back into the side. But of course, that's very difficult. It's not as if people have been playing county cricket or in leagues around the world to get themselves into some sort of form. One of the difficulties England face and the West Indies, they basically effectively come from will be operating in a sterile environment. And then to go into, you know, the hard-hitting nature of Test cricket will be very difficult, I think, for both sides.
Mm-hmm. Doc?
Yeah, I'm interested in the Tarouk situation and with him leaving the biosecure bubble to deal with his family issues. That would probably definitely... But you said he'd miss the third test. Possibly
the first.
Well, the first. I mean, it really just depends on the timing.
If he misses the first, supposedly needs to quarantine for 2 weeks. Then you may need a captain for some time.
Yep.
Yeah. Look, it's a really, really interesting point that you raise, and I think the match conditions and the secure bubble in terms of the 250. People that will be involved in each test match, and that's from caterers down to broadcasters, media, players themselves, support staff, etc. I mean, what is based around the current restrictions that we're operating in the UK, but things are quite fast moving here from that point of view. Obviously, we've had a lot of demonstrations, understandably, for Black Lives Matter, which is obviously a very prominent and very important cause across the globe, and no more so here than in the UK. And a lot of people have been out protesting, as is their right. So there's been a lot of people kind of move. There's been far more movement that we've seen in the country over the last sort of week or so than we have for some time. And it's a really interesting point that you raise, Dr. Ford, as far as Joe Root. What happens if he leaves the bubble? When can he come back in? And I think, you know, they'll probably address that as they come across. But there'll be, before that happens and before the game, there'll be a very clear protocol that he will have to follow, that's for sure.
So he can't just nip out
like, you know, many England players before, Michael Vaughan being a prime example, nipped out and was at the birth of his, I think his first or second child, mm-hmm. and was, you know, back batting in the afternoon. That's definitely not a possibility in the environment that will be created.
Yeah, I'm going to watch that with interest. So Andy brought up an interesting point, which I think even some of the tabloids in the UK have speculated on, that our team making the tour has saved the ECB a great debt, and therefore there's a huge debt of gratitude because of not having to repay a big chunk of the £280 million mm-hmm. to Sky for broadcasting the cricket. Do you think this is the big motivating factor, or do you think it's a matter of sport being very important even during COVID-19?
Oh, I mean, I think you hit the nail squarely on the head. I mean, I think the ECB and mm-hmm. us as cricket fans and those that work in the media are incredibly appreciative of the West Indies coming over. And a couple of journalists over here, John Etheridge of The Sun, notably said, you know, if their boot was on the other foot, would England be travelling back over to the West Indies? And it's a really interesting point that he made. I mean, I think as a country, we're really grateful. And I think the numbers you talk about, I think the game is worth 280 million from an international point of view in the UK across a season. If you chuck in the domestic incomes that come in, it's up to about 380 million. Now, that has been just wiped sideways. And this is, bear in mind, the ECB turned over £211 million last year. Incredible, a rise in revenue of up 55 million, largely because, of course, hosting the World Cup. But this year has written off all the reserves. It's, you know, there was a situation whereby a month ago, we weren't sure if we were going to stage any cricket. It would have been completely ruled out. So the fact that they do have an opportunity mm-hmm. to restore or maintain the broadcast options, of course, you know, that Sky have, and the BBC, of course, who have the highlights and the radio coverage, is absolutely critical. And had this tour not have gone ahead, it would have left the West Indies with England with an enormous hole to fill. I mean, you cannot underestimate the impact that having the West Indies over will have for the ECB in being able to fulfill those broadcasting commitments. I mean, to say that the nation is grateful is a very much an understatement. It's an incredible gesture, and I think we're all here incredibly grateful that we're going to see cricket.
Is there any speculation about any additional benefit that the West Indies team can have from being so kind?
Well, I mean, Dr. Ford, this is a really, really good question. I mean, if it was up to me and it was up to the majority of the people that work in English cricket, we would be touring the Caribbean three times a year. I can assure you of that. It's everybody in this country, you know, if they had a second team, they would, you know, nail their colours firmly to the West Indies mast. I think the other point is that, you know, the two sides are really competitive. Bear in mind, the West Indies have beaten England three out of the last five test matches. We're very unlucky not to beat England in England last time round. They got rough conditions at Lord's in that deciding test match, lost the toss, of course, and Jimmy Anderson did his thing, and that was that. They were humbled last year in the West Indies. You know, they match up really brilliantly, and England have only won once in the Caribbean since 1969. You know, it is a wonderful place to tour, and I think, you know, I think that England will bend over backwards in response to what the West Indies have done to make sure that there are more lucrative tours, because obviously that's where the benefit and the value comes for you, for the West Indies, in terms of both the tourism that comes across, the broadcast value, the sponsorship. You know, when England come to town, it's a significant income across the board. And, you know, England love to tour the Caribbean. As a nation, we'd love to come there on a more of a regular basis. And I think actually what is a driving force, not just the West Indies' generosity on this occasion, but the fact that two sides are very, very competitive, both away from home and at home.
The efforts of the NHS have been very important during this COVID time, and there's the talk of the England team wearing some blue armbands to show their support mm-hmm. For the NHS. How important has the NHS been to the UK during this time?
Oh, I mean, you know, the key message to start off with of this entire epidemic was stay at home, save lives and protect the NHS. The NHS has borne the entire brunt of COVID-19, has never been overrun, has never been in a situation where it had to be on a war footing, a triage footing, and that's where you literally assess people on their vulnerability and their expectation of getting through the virus. Never was that a scenario because of the brilliance and the response of the NHS. We've had NHS Nightingales hospitals set up around the country that were there to cater in case the number of people, the hospital admissions went up. I mean, it's been an extraordinary performance. I mean, we've never seen anything like this in our lifetime. The last serious pandemic here was obviously the Spanish influenza in 1918. I mean, the impact and the efforts of the NHS has been incredible from start to finish throughout this entire period of our lives. Absolutely incredible.
In terms of the captain of the England side, of course, if there's no Joe Root, a lot of talk about Ben Stokes. Do you agree with that?
It's a tricky one. I mean, I think Jos Buttler possibly would be a more pragmatic. I mean, Ben Stokes has a lot on his plate. He's one of the best fielders in the side. He has been a talismanic force for England over the last 12 to 18 months. I mean, his performances in all forms of the game have been incredible. Mm. To burden him with the expectation of captaincy, where somebody like Jos Buttler, who's been vice-captain on a number of occasions in the past, I think he would do a pretty admirable job. Mm-hmm. Not absolutely definitive of his place, Jos Buttler. He hasn't been in a great deal of form. That's the only problem you would say, is that actually putting him under any undue pressure when actually he could do with some runs and perhaps a tidier performance behind the stumps. That's the only consideration. But it's very likely between those two. I mean, the other person you could consider is Rory Burns. Should he go back into the side? He's been out with an ankle injury caused during football. But, of course, he captained Surrey to the domestic title back in 2018 and is arguably the most experienced captain in that side. Going into the series.
Final question to you. Who do you think will win the series?
It's really interesting. I think the fact that it's being played behind closed doors really brings the West Indies very heavily into it. Because, you know, it kind of, to some extent, takes a large portion of home advantage out of the equation. You know, some of those environments that England create, not that they're hostile by any stretch of the imagination, but they're noisy. You know, we would expect a very charismatic summer at the venues that we have the test matches. The Oval would have been a magnificent venue for the West Indies to play at, of course. You know, if you look back on the incredible performances from the West Indies there over time. But you look at somewhere like Old Trafford, plenty of pace and bounce there. The Aegeus Bowl, you know, that games rarely go 4 days, let alone 5 days there. Always a result surface. Mm-hmm. You know, that brings the depth of that West Indies attack, you know, which will give England a real going over. There's some serious pace coming over, and especially, you know, some of the reserves as well. Mm-hmm. It'll be really interesting to see what the makeup is. You know, from an England point of view, you know, both sides will be really shorn of hard match practice going into it. It'll be two very, very rusty teams going toe to toe, and it really will boil down to who reacts quickest. It'll be fascinating to see, but I think it'll be really tight.
All right. Thanks, Johnny. Mm-hmm. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Pleasure.
Time is tight, and we're going to pause for business calls. When we come back, we're going to go to Dominica, Nature Island, talk to Shane Chillingford. Mason and Guest is brought to you in association with our very good friends at Barbados Lottery, promoting youth sport and culture.
It's time to scratch your ticket. Scratch and you could win it. Plenty lottery games to win. Scratch. Are you going to win something?
Win up to $200,000 instantly with Cash Money, the new $20 instant super scratch ticket from the Barbados Lottery. The Cash Money Super Ticket has 4 games on each ticket with a whopping 62 chances to win. Available at Barbados Lottery agents island-wide.
It's time to scratch your ticket. Scratch and you could win it. It's time to scratch your ticket. Scratch Barbados Lottery.
All right. We were trying to make some kind of contact with Shane Shillingford, but of course we're going to try to do that a little bit later on. But let's go to the land of rain, land of beautiful people, of course, the land of the lead selector, Roger Harper. Roger, good evening to you. How are you?
Good evening, Andrew. Good evening to everyone. I'm fine, thank you.
Good, good, good. All right. Well, the players are all settled. Have you had a chance to speak to anyone in England? Maybe like the captain or the manager so far, anybody?
No. I'm giving everyone a chance to settle in. I'll try and catch the coach and find out how things are going. But no, I haven't spoken to anyone.
All right. Of course, when you were with us last week, in fact, the following morning, there was the announcement of the squad, and perhaps you can just give us some ideas to how you'd have come up with certain players. Of course, the big talk in Guyana is the non-selection of Versami Pramor. They're unhappy there. I'm sure you've heard that.
Oh, yes. And, you know, with the sort of performance that Pramor has had this season and over the years, that's not surprising. But if you look at the structure of the team, you know, the test squad and the reserves, you know, you realize that there aren't a lot of spinners in the party. Mm. Going to England, we looked at the sort of conditions you're likely to face there and the sort of bowlers that, you know, we'll need in the squad. And Thornwall was selected as a spin in the test squad from his last performance in his last test match. And looking at reserves, we thought you'd look at replacements for positions and places in the team, and we picked one spinner to replace, you know, as a direct replacement, and the panel went for the incumbent who was on the last tour.
Mm-hmm. But you would have gotten the reaction there, right there in Guyana, the Berbice Association, he's a Berbician. In fact, the president came out and said he was disgusted that Versami Pramor didn't make it.
Yes, I've heard all of that. And like I said, you know, Pramor has been performing exceptionally well over the last few years. So, mm-hmm. You know, I'm not surprised.
Interestingly enough, though, when we look at the players, the 14 plus the 11, no Guyanese in the side. What's going on there? Is it a problem with being able to leave Guyana or something? Or they just couldn't make the side?
Well, Andrew, I think your memory may be as short that two of the players that decided not to tour were from Guyana. So, mm-hmm. You know, Guyana has had players in the squad who opted out.
Yeah, but I mean, but the fact of the matter is that, I mean, you wouldn't consider Reefer to be a Guyanese, would you?
Well, I think, you know, by now he probably has a Guyana passport.
Indeed. Now, in terms of Bonner, that surprised many people. In Kuma Bonner getting to the side. What would have been the thinking there, Roger, to put Mr. Bonner in?
I think his weight of performance, but not only that, the way he made his runs, the way he held, you know, the reports we had from the scouts that watched the matches, the selectors that were there, either myself or Myers, the way he's been able to put his innings together and the job he's done. And, you know, it's the sort of player that we thought would stand the team in good stead, mm-hmm. in being able to hold an innings together and bat with a lower order and take charge if necessary.
Mm-hmm. You know, they're saying that Kyle Mayers was unlucky not to have gotten into the 14-man squad. He's a reserve, having done so well. On the sheer weight of his runs, people thought that perhaps Kyle might have nipped Bonner.
Well, a lot of people thought a lot of things, Andrew.
Indeed. But Clive would have been, I mean, he had a very impressive season, Kyle Mayers.
Bonner, I think, you know, if you look at it, he had a very impressive season too. Mayers as well. Mm-hmm. And don't forget, we had a couple of players that pulled out as well.
Right, that's true too.
So, you know, those are things to take into consideration.
Right. Just before Dr. Ford comes in, I'm sure you're happy that Shannon Gabriel is back.
Well, yes, I think that Gabriel, you know, a fit and firing Gabriel will add a lot of impetus, a lot of firepower to the bowling lineup. So we're looking forward to him getting back to his best here.
Dr. Ford? Doctor? Is Dr. Ford there? Has he left us? Hello, Doc?
Yeah, you can hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes, yes. Roger, the, you know, I know selectors look at stats and look at other things, you know, the intangibles of a player, like the player's drive, the discipline, the work ethic. You mentioned about scouts, but explain to us how the external help outside of the selection panel gives you the information about players you're deliberating about. Mm-hmm. For example, if they're, we looked at the spinners, the several spinners or the fast bowlers, do you get stuff written in writing reports that compare players seen by scouts, or do you get, what's the format of the information you get from your scouts and other people that help you to come to your final decision?
Well, I don't know what transpired in the past exactly, but we had scouts watching the games that selectors were not able to look at. And we developed a template. So we get we have a particular format in which the reports come in with a particular structure. And, you know, they cover a wide range of topics and ideas and areas as far as looking at the player, looking at players are concerned.
Yeah, I wanted you to shed some light on that. You get information in whatever form you get it in, and maybe a tabulated form or a summary form. But does the information give a ranking of individuals in similar areas, let's say all-rounders or spinners? Mm-hmm. And how do you assess someone's work ethic, someone's drive, the competitiveness, the things that make a player great that involves a lot of extra work outside of what you see?
Well, they ask a comment on a lot of different things, not just they run someone scored, but a manner in which they scored it, whether they had chances, whether they were able to come through any tough periods, how they handled that, how they handled batting in different areas, whether they played with the sense of urgency and purpose, the application, all those things with bowlers, how they bowled in the first spell, second spell, they came at the third spell, whether, you know, the third spell was, you know, as energetic as your first spell, whether, you know, the intangibles, like you said, whether they really put pressure on the batsmen, whether they had chances dropped, those things. All those things are noted in the forms that in the templates. Yeah. Mm.
Roger?
How difficult is it, let's say, for a player like Stanton Gabriel, who's coming off an injury, hasn't played any competitive cricket, is just seen in a practice environment, is it that you go back to the past, or is it that you can assess accurately what's happening and where he is right now that makes you pull the trigger on getting him in that second tier that has made the tour?
Well, two things here, Doc. Shannon is involved in a rehab program, so he's been monitored all the time, right? And he's been in a back-to-play protocol, so to speak. And so we knew where he was at all the time. But you also have to remember that we're not going straight into competitive cricket here. There's some 4 weeks before that first test match. So he has time as well to get himself into competitive fitness. You know, we expect in the team's program of preparation for the test match, there'll be some practice games. So he has opportunity as well to get himself ready and to show that he's ready.
Roger, in terms of practice matches, how many do you expect before the first test?
Well, I do not know. I haven't had a look at the exact program.
Right.
Signed by the coach, but I expect you'll have at least two.
Mm-hmm. Hetmar, Paul, and Darren Bravo not going. Are you surprised?
Well, I can't say that I'm surprised. I think from the inception, you know, CWI said that players would have the opportunity to decide whether they're willing to go on a tour like this. So if the player isn't comfortable, then, you know, the best thing maybe is for them to decide to stay home. And they took that option. So, you know, I'm not surprised that any player decided to do that. But sometimes, you know, things create opportunities for other players. And, you know, there's an opportunity for some players who to really try and cement the players, try and step up to the players and show that they deserve to be there.
Mm. And talking about opportunities, I note with interest that Floyd Lamont Reefer is going to be the batting coach on this tour.
Yes, yes, that I understand and so as well.
Mm. Are you surprised?
You know, and Floyd, one of the things we must appreciate, Floyd has done some, I mean, look at the job Floyd did with the emerging players during the Super 50 tournament. You know, I think that he'll do some really great work with the reserve squad if that's what he's asked to do.
Mm-hmm. What are your expectations, Roger?
I expect the team to be very competitive, but its key is that we have to utilize the period prior to the test match to really get ourselves acclimatized and acclimatized, if I can put
it
that way.
Right, like that one.
Get used to the conditions in England and everything about England, and make sure that when the first ball of the first test match is bowled, that we are really ready. The idea is to be ready from ball one, not to be looking to get slowly into the game, but really to try and jump on the opposition from early.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the things that could play in our favor is the fact that there are no crowds. So you don't have that Barmy army bellowing at you, you know, and inspiring the home team. You know, this will be like a neutral venue. So we can really focus on our cricket and doing what we need to do.
Doc?
Yeah. Roger, let's suppose that maybe the squad needs to be added to with the reserve. How will that decision be made? And if it needs to be made, when is there cutoff time for it to be made?
Sorry, I didn't get that clearly.
Yeah, the question is if you need to, I'm not sure. I think we usually may travel with 15 and we have 14. I'm asking you, if it is that the squad will be increased to 15, how will that decision be made? And is there a cutoff time for it to be made?
Well, I think if you want to increase the squad, I think it will have to be done before that first test match, I imagine.
But that's a recommendation from you, though, because, in fact, when you were on the show last week, you said 14 and you expected that it would go to 15 because it's now 14-11. But ideally, based on what you were saying, you really would have been looking at 15-10. Am I right about that, Roger?
Well, there's still that possibility. We'll see how things develop during the 4 weeks leading up to the first test match, and then we'll decide.
Right. Final question. Can we win the series?
Of course we can.
Mm.
I don't think anyone gave us a chance last year when England toured the West Indies.
Right.
I think they themselves took it for granted that they'd win the series and they got a shock of their lives. So I think that just looking at that, we should have that belief that we can do it. And I think we need our senior guys, the guys who've toured England before, or batters in particular, because I'm confident our bowlers will hold their own.
Mm-hmm.
We need our batters to step up. We need the guys who've been to England, who've been around and done it, to really come to the party and be upfront and consistent, you know, and allow some of the other guys who are touring there for the first time to be able to play around them. Mm-hmm. And once we can score, you know, 600 runs in a test match consistently, I think we'll have a chance of winning. That means we have to try and get 350 in our first inning.
Mm-hmm.
We have to do it on a regular basis and we give ourselves a good chance of winning.
All right. Roger, thanks very much for coming through and talking to us. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thank you, Andrew. And thanks for having me. Good evening.
All right. Well, thanks to Roger. We're going to pause for business calls. When we come back, we're going to talk to Ian Bradshaw, of course, the former West Indies or Uncle Mason. The guest is brought to an association with our very good friends at Barbados Lottery, promoting youth sport and culture.
It's time to scratch your ticket. Scratch and you could win it. Plenty lottery games to win. Scratch and you could win something.
Here's your chance to cash in on big winnings for 2020 with the newest $10 scratch ticket from the Barbados Lottery. Purchase a cash-in ticket today for your chance to win up to $100,000 and to double or even triple your winnings on each ticket. So play and win big with cash-in from the Barbados Lottery.
All right, let's talk to Ian Bradshaw, former West Indies all-rounder. Good evening to you, Ian Bradshaw. How are you?
Good night, Andrew. And once again, good night to Dr. Ford.
Mm-hmm.
Good night, Ian.
Right. All right. Are you excited about this series, Ian?
I would say I'm glad that cricket is resuming. Any cricket lover is always happy.
All right, we're trying to talk to Ian Bradshaw, but just hearing a phone going there somewhere in the back. Of course, our technical...
Yes, Andrew.
Yes, okay. I wonder what happened there just now. The point you were making.
I was saying to you that, like any cricket fan, I'm happy that international cricket is starting back. The conditions under which we are resuming is very much uncertain. We know with the COVID around and how it has impacted England, one would naturally be concerned with regards to the safety of the players. I'm sure that the English Cricket Board and the West Indies Cricket Board would have had their consultations, and I'm sure that they would have debriefed the players. But you're just not sure with this environment. And I guess collectively we all say a prayer that all those young men who have gone out to represent West Indies will return safely. I do share some admiration for those who were strong enough to decline the offer, because it takes a strength of character to think independently, and I have respect for those who might have chosen not to go on this occasion.
Mm-hmm. Now, when we look at the construct of the squad, of course, there are reserves, 14 members of that squad, and you've got in terms of 11 reserves. When you have an assessment, are you happy with the squad traveling, Ian?
Well, let me start by saying that it's not usual to tour England and only have 14 players. I know there's some talk of increasing that official to a party. And just because England is such an unpredictable place, and the grounds are different. The climate, it can change very quickly. So I'm sure that the selectors would want as many options available to them. And I believe that at some stage before the tour, I wouldn't be surprised if we increase our options, particularly maybe from a bowling standpoint. Just give ourselves another option to go into the test series. Naturally. Yes, you go ahead, Andrew.
But that's interesting you say that, because originally I heard that there were 15 members of the squad, and then it was, I may be wrong, then it went down to 14. But I have a strong feeling that they're going to have 15 at the end, and they're 11 reserves, and don't be surprised if Shannon Gabriel comes into the 15-man squad. That's what I've been told.
Okay, we have the benefit of almost a month or so in England preparing. And you know, with international cricket these days, you tend to just turn up and play. So to have an opportunity to have a full month, I think it's going to be really critical that we utilize that well, be very focused and well prepared. We could lose the series mentally if we are distracted before the start of that series. So it's going to be incumbent that the management team can really focus the guys. Yes, I understand there are trying conditions that these guys are going to be playing under, but they're professionals. And they must not act as professionals and really utilize the time to the best of their advantage.
Doc?
Hi, good night, Ian.
Hi, good night.
So you think based on the way the squad is put together, with the two all-rounders, the keeper and predominantly batsmen, you think a bowler should be added? If so, what type of bowler would complement the armory of bowlers that we already have. There's Joseph, there's Roach, there's the second holder, and the captain, Cornwall. What sort of bowler would you like to see added to the group?
Well, I think that someone that will provide a bit of shot would be important. If you look at our attack with Jason and Kimar as the two senior bowlers, they are quite steady. They have good control. But it's just that shock effect that might be needed in our attack. And with Shamar on his first tour and Azari, you know, always trying to build back himself back to where he was heading a couple of years ago. I think that maybe if you have a Shannon Gabriel or Shane Thomas having a strong outing within this month, you may see them being added to the squad to give the selectors some more options going into that first test. I mean, we're playing the first test. It's going to be down south in the Rose Bowl. We're hoping that at that time we'll get good weather, and it would allow for a bit of pace in the wicket and so forth. And if so, then the extra shock option may be good to have at our disposal.
Mm. Are you worried that we don't actually have a bonus? Well, I think we've had a problem with the number three batsman for a while. We don't have a third opener. It means that either Hope or Brooke would more than likely bat at three. How concerned are you with us not really having a number three batsman of best quality in the West Indies, arguably?
I mean we've been concerned with our batting for a while, so I think let's stop him and just be realistic that mm-hmm. we don't have the quality of batting that we want. I mean, we in Barbados, we grew up with Dunk Shrees. We don't have them now, but we remember it. But you get over the fact that they're no longer Dunk Shrees, and you get on with it. And we don't have a lot of quality batsmen. But what we hope for is that collectively we can rally and we can get 300 and 350 and 400. By batting deep and batting sensibly. There are other teams in the world that have a similar challenge. And they managed to fight through for a number of years. We saw that with a team like New Zealand, you know, where they understood, each player understood that when you came to the crease, your job was to build a partnership which allowed the team to put a competitive total on the board. Getting runs in England is critical, especially if we can get first in the runs. So there is no doubt that we'll have to bat deep. Those who would have benefited from playing in England before will have to show some experience. I believe that could be the reason why someone like a Jermaine Blackwood was recalled, because he would have toured England before.
Mm-hmm.
His record isn't outstanding. Neither is that of Bonner or let's extent Brooks and so forth. But the reality is that because of the fact that Darren Bravo and Hetmeyer have not taken the opportunity, we have to rely on these guys now to, as you said, build partnerships within the middle. I think that Shane Delrich and Jason Holder have massive roles to play in the lower middle order. And very much our tour could be hinged on the performance of Jason Holder, because as the captain in England, he'll be targeted. He'll be targeted by the media, because they understand the importance Jason Holder is. Make no bones about it, England won back the Winston Trophy, and there are a number of guys within the England ranks who are not as secured as they would like to think they are. And I think that at this time, if Joe Root misses that first test, as he's likely to, I think this is prime time for the West Indies to go one up and try to go to the north of England, where the weather could be dodgy, and hold that lead and retain the Winston Trophy.
Ian, you brought up an interesting point about the batsman. The modern day West Indian Test batsman doesn't average 40. Bravo isn't going to be there. His form hasn't been good of late, but he has the best average, just 37.69. All the other guys are in the low 30s, except maybe for Hetmyer and also Hope, who are in the high 20s. What do you think is the problem with the modern-day West Indian batsman at test level?
I think that the truth is that our regional cricket has not prepared guys to bat long, to concentrate, build innings, pace yourself. I remember sitting down and listening to Sir Everton and those guys, and they speak of getting in, and once they're in, valuing their hand and understanding how that sometimes you take advantage of the opposition, sometimes you have to pull back, you know, read the game and so forth. The reality is that we don't have a lot of guys scoring heavily in first-class cricket, and it's going to be very difficult for them if they don't score heavily in first-class cricket just to perform to another level at test level. So until we get those quality players, as I keep saying, collectively, we have to bat sensibly. Guys have to understand the responsibilities, and let's put compass totals on the board. There are more than one ways in which you can get a 400 total. It doesn't have to be just have the one-star player scoring 150 and other guys scoring 20s and 30s. We can get some 50s, some 60s, and hopefully someone like a Shea Hope who goes to England with the memory of doing well. He can take that with him. And he can get off to a good start. It's a short tour. So you're hoping that if you can find form early, you can sustain it for the rest of the games.
Okay, on to you, Andrew.
The question for you, can we win the series? I always ask that question. Can we win the series?
Yes, I think we can win the series. I think that the key for winning this series will be scoring runs. I have a lot of respect for the possible attack that England, in English conditions, may put out. But I do think that their batting is suspect. And without Joe Root there, it gives West Indies a wonderful opportunity to be very, very competitive in this series.
Well, it should be very, very interesting. I really hope that the guys can come through. You're saying that Jason Holder is going to be of great importance. But, of course, from a West Indian point of view, we'll be looking forward to seeing Jofra Archer.
Yes, well, that is if he plays. You know, we all know that England have a strange way of picking teams. And while we as West Indians are proud that we have someone who would have been brought up here and has done so exceedingly well, I'm often very concerned of how England sometimes treat some of their fast bowlers. And I'm just hopeful that Jofra can be successful. He can be successful after the series. I have no problem with that. But as I said before, the focus for us now is to retain that Wisden Trophy and to continue to regain respect in the cricketing landscape.
We thanks very much indeed, Ian, for talking to us, and we wish you a good evening.
Thank you, Andrew.
All right, let's go to Dominica now and talk to Shane Shillingford. Shane, how are you, my friend? He's trying to see if he can make contact with Shane Shillingford, who was just on the line. Maybe he's gone down to the airport there in Melville Hall. Hello, Shane? All right, it seems as if we are having a bit of a problem. Doctor, did you scare Shane?
No, I didn't. I'm sure he's somewhere close by. But a very interesting problem that we have to solve, Andrew, as far as the batting is concerned. And if our regional tournament doesn't produce players that can bat long and have the stamina to compile large scores, it really makes us wonder about our statistics from the bowling aspect, even though our bowling is quite decent, it makes me wonder how we can, how, you know, that shows you how difficult it is for the selectors to assess players and what they can do and what the stats mean. So I'm hoping that with extra work and determination, you know, having watched a show like Last Dance with Michael Jordan, seeing how hard he worked, even though he was a great player, that may be the missing link for some of our younger people right now.
All right, we're going to try to make that connection again to Shane and Dominica. Hello, Shane, are you hearing me? All right, hello, Shane, are you hearing me? Just trying to see if you can make that connection with Shane Schillingford in Dominica, but I think we're having just a slight problem. We will certainly make contact with Shane. But I expect an interesting series. I think Jofra Archer, once he's fit, is going to make a significant difference. We may very well see Doc Spin coming in, because I'm hearing that the pitches are going to be dry. And, you know, Cornwall could make a difference along with Ruston Chase.
Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating choice for us to make. We know the contribution that Dalridge and Holder have made batting at 7 and 8 in the recently, and then the trying to decide if to go with the extra, go with the spinner, the definitive spinner, or if we should utilize the all-rounder Chase. So the thing is, will the wicket spin, or will the bunks of Chase and having an extra batsman be more important? I think the selectors on tour will have a lot to think about.
Well, I think, Doc, we now got Shane Schillingford coming in by Zoom. Hello, Shane, how are you?
Shane, this is Keswick.
Oh, it's Keswick Williams. Okay, so it looks as if we actually got Keswick Williams coming in. Of course,
I hope he isn't driving again.
You're not driving, Keswick, are you?
No, I'm not driving. I'm home. I just.
All right. First of all, I like the chain you got there. Where did you buy that?
Just something small.
We like it. All right. Now, of course, we got a couple of things to talk about. Technology now, we're very much on Zoom now, so we are happy to have him online. First of all, before we even look at the series, what happened in the 10-10 you had the other day? Were you happy with it?
Unfortunately, we didn't get to the final.
I realize that.
But, I mean, at the end of the day, what I was happy for is that semi-professional cricket was brought to St. Vincent and the Grenadines so that youngsters could get the chance to explore their talent and stuff like that, you know, show the world what they can do. I mean, I did really well for my team. I ended up with most wickets and the second most runs for my team. So that was a plus. But at the end of the day, I couldn't give my all because of a slight injury that I had, because I never really stopped training. You know, I always keep my work going. I always train hard. I always continue to do what I had to do. So I had a slight groin strain. Going to the tournament, so I just try to cope with it and just try to play to the best. You know, couldn't really push it too much because cricket is going to start back soon, I assume. So you don't want to get any big injuries going into this big tournament. So I was just kind of preserving myself, just happy that the youngsters have a chance to show their talent out there to the world.
Yes. And how was the tournament overall, though? Were you happy with it?
It was good. First time out, St. Vincent, same as Cricket Association doing a semi professional league. I honestly think it was well done. Congrats to Dr. Kishore Shallow and his executive, who did a brilliant job. The camera works, everything was great. It was the first time I know ITF is doing a professional cricket match, and I think they really did a good job. The quality as well, it was good. It was good for the level of cricket, and it can only go above from there. I mean, it cannot go down, it can only go above. So I think it was a well-done job to the guys who was behind the scenes doing the video, the running the tournament and everything like that. I think it was well done.
What about the interest in terms of the Vincentians? I mean, they were quite keen. I know a lot of people couldn't watch the games, but the interest was high?
The interest was very high. I was surprised. I don't know if it's because of Corona. But the interest was very high because, I mean, a lot of people didn't have anything to do. So, I mean, everybody want to come out to the game. But the people who are in charge of the COVID-19 and stuff here, who's registered to sports and stuff like that, they didn't give us any crowd for the first 2 days. And then they give us 100, 150, 200 going into the tournament to see how well the organizers can manage it. And the guys did well. The last 4 days, I was really shocked the amount of people that came out the finals day. I'm sure it had over 400 people there, which it's really local cricket, you know what I mean? So I think that the people, the interest is there, and it can only get bigger and better. That's what I think. It can only get bigger and better. And if the interest of the people, you know, continue to rise, you never know.
Kenzo, a
league whereby people can be paid properly.
Right. Just before Dr. Ford comes in, if you had to make any recommendations to the organizers, what would you say to them? You had this tournament, 10-10, anything that we'd want to tweak?
I would say it, but maybe the financial aspect of it.
Okay.
But at the end of the day, I really don't see much things they can tweak because it's the first time.
Right.
It's the first time. So, as I say, it can only get bigger and better. I honestly think it was well done, and they handled it, especially in a time like this where Corona is all over. I think they did a brilliant job handling the tournament. They put fines in place. You have to sanitize your hand every time you go onto the field, off the field. There are people walk around, sanitize you probably every hour or whatever the case is. So everything was done well. The only part of the tournament that I would say, you know, they can probably improve on, which they would, you know, it's a financial aspect. But at the end of the day, as I say, it's the first time, it can only get better.
Dr. Ford.
Kesri, during the tournament, there was a spike in COVID cases in St. Vincent. Can you tell me if that affected the morale or the approach to being biosecure during the tournament?
Well, what happened is that the seven cases that occurred during the tournament were guys who came home from cruise ship. You know, so as soon as they came home, they were on the cruise ship. They were moved from there into a secure environment where they're going to be for the next 14 days, and they're going to be well taken care of. So it's not really a community spread thing whereby it's spread between communities and then you have to worry. It was nothing like that. It was a possible case of, okay, the sailors came in. The Prime Minister did a really good job bringing the sailors. The sailors came in. Seven of them had corona. Move them to the secure environment whereby they're going to be there for the next 14, 15, how much days until they're cured. So that was way out of our reach. So it really didn't hamper us at all.
Did the crowd wear masks or did they just distance?
As long as you're coming to the games, you have to wear a mask. Your pressure's being checked. You're being sanitized as often as possible while you're at the ground. And a lot of it's really surprisingly that a lot of people wasn't too flustered about wearing the mask, and a lot of people wasn't too flustered about getting sanitized at the ground, you know, and the spacing of the seats as well. I think every 5 seats you have someone sitting, so the spacing in the seating and stuff like that was done by the association. So everything was well organized and put together by the organization, which I think was well done, to be honest.
What about the food at the ground and refreshments for the audience? And how was it done for the players?
Food wasn't on sale. As you know, the game starts at 8:30. What I think that happened though is that players that came from far was given snacks, you know, after games or if they choose. Because what happened? Buses travel from both sides of the island.
Okay.
So it's like you're in Barbados and one bus leaves St. Lucie and another one leaves St. Philip. Yes, I know Barbados. I was there for 3 years in Newry. So one bus leaves St. Philip, right. One bus leaves St. Lucie,
right.
And they come to Kensington Oval. So they pick up players coming down to Kensington Oval and they will get there for like 7 o'clock, because remember the game starts at 8:30. Mm-hmm. Because Dream 11 sponsored this tournament, obviously they want to see their cricket. So for the Indian fans, we started at 8:30. So the guys who play the first game, if they want to go home, the bus take them home. And if they want to stay, they're going to have refreshments there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that was well done. You know, I've never seen anybody in massive crowds. If you're going to the physio, no more than two persons can be in the room at any point in time. There are three different stations at the Players Pavilion, where there's the viewing area, the main dressing room, and the locker rooms. So 13 players, they separate the players
mm-hmm.
in different rooms. And then there's a viewing room outside when the player's going to bat next to walk out. So everybody was separated. There wasn't a point whereby no player had to be yelled at. I mean, there was a certain point in the game whereby some guys might forget and a guy drop a catch and run over and he'll tap them on the back and he has to shout out, yo, 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 you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, it's very, when someone drop a catch, you want to say, oh, well done. Not well right. done, sorry. When someone drop a catch, you want to run over and tap them on their back and like, it's all right, it's all right. It's right, just right. Mm-hmm. You know? And then you remember like, and what's surprising is that, you know, everybody use sweat and spit on the ball. You couldn't use that on the ball. And I was surprised that no one did it in the tournament. I surprised myself that I didn't use it in the tournament because I'm accustomed, you know, touching it and stuff like that. So it was well done. I was very, very surprised with the level of the attitude for the guys. And I'm being honest, the first time cricket play internationally, worldwide on TV live and everything, I think that the guys really held up their own and did a good job when it comes to, you know, even the celebrations, guys tapping feet and stuff like that, keeping at a distance, doing their own celebrations and stuff like that, you know. So, I mean, it can only get bigger and better from there, mm-hmm. honestly. The refreshment, if people are going to go outside to buy, they were security. I don't know how that part went, because I wasn't a part of the crowd, because players cannot go where the crowds are. We have our different part where we walk to the pavilion. Players can go to the spectator side. The spectators cannot come to the players.
Mm.
So it was well done.
Mm. Are you looking forward to the possibility of playing the CPL in one mm-hmm. location if it mm-hmm. does come on?
Well, that one will be hard. You know, CPL is a party sports, and the sort of energy that I get when I play CPL, I don't think that I would get it from playing VPL in St. Vincent. The sort of energy and the vibes that I get playing CPL. Playing it in one country would not be an issue to me. Playing it without crowd, it might be strange.
Mm-hmm.
And then playing it without doing my celebrations, yo, I don't know how I'll deal with that. But at the end of the day, I have to. You know what I mean? At the end of the day, the stats come. I mean, fans make you the person that you are, because fans are the one that make me the Kezzy Bounce or the celebration king or the player that I am. You know what I mean? But at the end of the day, you have to play your cricket. You have to do well, whether there's fans or not,
mm-hmm.
or spectators or not. You still have a job to do. You know, so I will try my best. It's going to be hard probably for the first 2-3 games, but I guess I'll get accustomed to it after a while. But let's see how it goes. I'm ready for CPL. I'm getting myself ready.
Okay, Andrew.
Yes. So you're getting yourself ready. And it looks as if it's going to be Trinidad, Keswick.
Yes, it's going to be played in Trinidad. I mean, you know the wickets in Trinidad is... I've done well in Trinidad every time I play CPL. So, I mean, playing all the games there, I don't know how much wickets I walk away with, but I guess I'll get a back for you.
Just before you go, Keswick, the West Indies side very much now in England. No doubt you're wishing the fellas well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that one will be very, very hard. I just spoke to my friend there in England, Ambrose. Sunil Ambrose is from St. Vincent as well.
Right.
He's like my brother. Mm. We played under 15 and 19 together. So we grew up in the ranks playing St. Vincent, Windward's, West Indies cricket together. And talking to him today, he's like, yo, bro, it's going to be a rough one here.
Mm.
you know, driving to the streets of London is in to Manchester. It's not like what we've been to before, brother. It's empty. There's no one here. It's like nobody can't see me. Nobody can't come check me. Nobody. You say, yo, it's gonna be a hard 2 months. I'm not gonna say I'm glad I'm not playing Test cricket, but this would have been a very, very hard one. You know, for those guys being there for 2 weeks before cricket and being in that situation that they're in now regarding, you know, can't see anyone, the security is gonna be tight, you have to wear a mask 24/7. They're not accustomed to that at the international level. People telling them what to do, when to do it, and how to do it mm-hmm. at certain time. It's gonna be a hard one. And I hope that the guys do well. I mean, the last tour that they played against England, they had a really good turnout. And I'm very confident that the guys will go out there and perform as well. Very, very confident. Roach, he's the last time he played, he was in good nick, and he's a guy that worked hard, so I know he's gonna go out there and do well. The skipper, Jason Holder, as you know, is probably the best all-rounder in the world when it comes to Test cricket. So I trust and hope that these guys will go out there and show England, whether they play in the Caribbean or in England, they can do well. And I'm sure that they're going to do well. They have a very good young team. Congrats to Shama for making the Test team as well. Mm-hmm. Really good young prospect. I hope that he go out there and do well. He's a guy that I saw grew up in Barbados playing cricket when we play cricket together and youth and all that. So congrats to him. And I hope that he go out there and show the world what he's capable of doing.
No?
Yeah, well, someone mentioned that psychologically, it's difficult to be away from home on tour. You've been on many tours. Is that something that you have to fight off, the homesickness? And mm-hmm. if that's the case, Wahadi, how do you get over that in a tour?
To be honest with you, when I start playing for West Indies, that's what I wanted. That's what I wanted. And to fight it off, I always say, cricket is what I want to play. If I'm home, I'm not playing cricket. So if I have to spend 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 months out here playing cricket, I would do that because this is what I signed up for. As long as you know what you sign up for, it becomes easier. I can remember there was a time I was on tour, not West Indies alone. I was on tour for like 4 months. I went on tour in England with West Indies, played a T20 series. Then he played the 5 1-days. From there, I went straight to BPL. And from BPL, I fly straight to New Zealand to meet back West Indies. We spent Christmas and New Year's there. And it was like 4 months on the road. And I've never felt like, yo, I want to go home. Mate, cricket is what I signed up to play. And as long as you know what you're playing cricket for and the reason why you're there, you will never get homesick, because I never got homesick at no point playing cricket, because this is what I want to do. This is my job. This is what I signed up for. This is what made the person I am today. So why shy away from it? That's how I control it. That's how I think about it. If other players get homesick, I guess they're not as serious about the game as they should be. Yeah. But I was in Barbados studying and playing cricket. And at no point, I never felt like, yo, I want to go home. This is what I signed up for. This is what I came here for. And I'm not going to make, because at the end of the day, if I'm home, who's going to be taking care of me? Who's going to be doing what I'm doing? Somebody is going to pick up that spot and happy to do what I'm doing now. Because every youngster in the Caribbean who's playing cricket at under 15 level would want the opportunity that I'm getting now. You understand? So why waste it? This is what I'm here for. This is what I signed up for. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to get flustered by it. Mm-hmm.
Well, Keswick, I want to thank you very much for coming through and talking to us. It was an absolute pleasure. We're going to do a part two, because I'll be very interested when we talk again as to your thoughts on West Indies cricket, where we went wrong, and your recommendations for the future. But, of course, we're going to do that another time. Enjoy the rest of your evening, and I like your chain.
Definitely. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot.
Nice seeing you. All right.
Thank you.
So there is Keswick by Zoom. We're going to go to Jamaica and talk to Wayne Lewis, who's the mayor of Kingston. Hello, Wayne. How are you?
Hey, Andrew. You're doing a very good evening to you. Good evening to all your your co-host, and of course, good evening to all your listeners.
Yes. All right. Are you excited about the West Indies tour, Wayne?
Well, I'm cautiously optimistic. I mean, you know, we have a lot on the line. We retain the Wisden Trophy, and we're trying to get it back and all of that. So, and not get it back, sorry, try to defend it. So let's hope that the guys are up to it, and they'll stay focused and deliver and surprise England again. It has not been a long time. Us beating England in England, let's hope that they can turn the table.
And a couple of Jamaicans are in. That should make you happy. Bonner, a bit of a surprise, is very much in the side. We see the return of Blackwood. And, of course, Minley gets an opportunity as well. And Campbell must be happy from a Jamaica perspective.
Well, can I tell you, I have never, ever, Andrew, looked at it like that, where some Jamaicans in the team, so I'm quite happy.
Mm.
You know, I'm just happy that, you know, there are 16 or 15 guys there and they grasp the opportunity and they do well. Of course, it's good to know that Jamaicans are in the team, but that's not my primary focus. But yes, Nkrumah Bonner, I've always, from when I was a selector, I get to look at him and work with him for a bit, and I've always respected his talent. For some reason, it wasn't coming through, and yes, he's been given an opportunity now based on some guys pulling out of the tour, and let's hope he grasps it with both hands and he'll deliver for the selectors and for the Caribbean people.
Interesting. In terms of course, you are the secretary of WIPA, and lots of talks recently, you know, salary cuts as far as West Indies cricket is concerned. You would have had a lot of tough negotiations with Cricket West Indies in recent times, I would imagine, Wayne.
Yes, to be honest, it was very tough. But when we look at what happened, what's happening in the Caribbean and compared to us, like for Australia, where they took, like, the players took like an 80% cut, our percent. 50%. We have some little suggestions as we have made to try and, you know, soften the blow for the guys at the lower end of the scale, and we're in negotiations. As a matter of fact, there's another meeting scheduled tomorrow with the cricket hierarchy to try and see if we can just to make some adjustments. But outside of that, we understand exactly what is happening, and we are working with Cricket West Indies for a position where the players will be not necessarily happy, but they still feel appreciative, and also that Cricket West Indies will continue to thrive and then they can execute on all their plans going forward. So it's a tough situation, but at the same time, it's quite understandable.
Wayne, I'm hearing that the reserves are not happy with their pay. Is that true?
You mean in England?
Yes.
Well, I don't know that anybody's happy, but this is what it is at the moment, and it's not like they have taken a cut. There's no cut as it relates to match fees. So I don't know why they're unhappy, because it's not like they're being asked to shave off 50% of their match fees. With all these negotiations, match fees are not touched, and therefore, you know, I'm kind of surprised to hear that. I need to talk to Wavell about that. I've never heard that, but I'm quite surprised. Match fees are the ones are what we have agreed on. We, of course, we try to get a special type of arrangement outside of the MOU, similarly to what transpired when the team went to Pakistan under the circumstances with the uncertainties around the security. This time is the uncertainties around this COVID-19 pandemic, and therefore we tried to move it in that direction. We weren't successful with it, but at the same time, they haven't lost anything.
Doc?
Good night, Wayne. Some months before the COVID became relevant here about some franchise players for the four-day professional league not being paid, not having their payments not being up to date. Has that been rectified as far as you're aware?
Well, the agreement is, yes. Thanks for asking that, because we have had extensive discussions about it. We have been assured by Cricket West Indies that that's the procedure, because come July 1, we're looking at a new year, 2021. So our position is we cannot go into a new contract year with monies owing for the previous contract year. So the understanding is that, yes, all the retained players, all the players with contracts, they have not been paid their match fees since the start of the four-day tournament. So they have owed 8 rounds. Of course, the guys who are paid for play, they are owed 5 because they got 3 rounds. They were paid for three matches. So the Cricket West Indies has assured us that those monies will be paid by June 30th of this month. So I'm just hoping that everything comes through. I even had a discussion today with Johnny Grave about that, where we talked about it, and just ensure that the whole strain on that, and therefore it will be rather embarrassing should the 30th of June, you know, arrives and there's no consensus, there's no payment. So they're aware of that and we're working through it with them. Of course, that's what we can do. We negotiate and we put our position on the board. It's not like we can take a gun and stick them up and say, pay the money now. It doesn't work that way. So therefore, we are taking their word for what it is. And we have had great relations with Cricket West Indies when they have promised us stuff in the past. They have delivered. So we are pretty much confident that they will deliver because they understand exactly what's at stake. So come 30th of June, I'm expecting that all the money is outstanding with the paid.
If there, let's say, is no T20 World Cup and some of the touring teams don't make it here and the salary cut persists or deepens, how would that affect the economic health of your organization?
That is going to affect us, not only us. Everyone will be affected adversely. And we're not anticipating that. We're hoping that that's not the case. Because, I mean, they need to be playing cricket. We need to have television rights. We need to have the sponsors and feel happy where they can write a check and pay to Cricket West Indies so that money can go into the pool so the players can be paid. So all hands are on deck at the moment because we're really hoping that, you know, things will turn around and, you know, we can start playing again, hoping that we will not have to have an adjustment in our 40 tournament or 50 overs tournament. We have seen the cancellation of the under the age group cricket, the females as well. We have seen cancellation in all those areas. So we're just hoping that, you know, it's basically out of our hands, but we're hoping that things will turn and then things can get back on track.
All right. Well, we got to leave it there. I know that Doc has got some other questions, but time is really, really fast approaching the time when we've got to leave the program. So we want to thank you very much indeed for coming through. We're going to certainly do a part two. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thanks for having me, man.
All right, guys. Bye. Quickly. Now, we got another couple of minutes left in the show. Floyd Lamont Reefer, just before he left Barbados, was very much talking to us on Mason and Guest, and he's happy to be back as the batting coach.
Yes, I am, Andrew. It's always good to be back on the international circuit and working to be the best cricketers we have in the Caribbean.
Yes, and you've been having some stints with the guys at Kensington Oval. How has that gone?
Yeah, I thought the 2 weeks went very well. We worked with the guys in small groups throughout the SM myself, along with some of the other BCA coaches, and I thought that the guys got a lot out of the sessions, and it's just a matter to continue when we get to England.
Yes, indeed. And I know you're on your way to England. Excited about going to England?
Yeah, I'm excited. Just looking forward to getting back into doing some work.
Yes, I would imagine. And no doubt looking forward to working with Phil Simmons.
Oh, definitely. I think Phil is a very good coach. He's very experienced and he's been doing well with the team over the last 2 months. So I'm looking forward to working with Phil and adding my value and my knowledge, you know, to the team to make sure that the guys, you know, do the best that they can in England. Obviously, my job is to prepare the batters and make sure they are mentally and skillfully as ready as possible for those test matches.
Yes, and you know the guys well because you would have worked with some of them at the World Cup. Good to work with the senior players again.
Yes, Andrew. I know all of the guys. I work with guys at the World Cup. Work with guys in the A-team as well. And some one or two of the guys are the emerging players. So I've worked with most of all the guys in the team. So it's just a matter for me, you know, just to continue and build those relationships.
Any concerns about COVID in relation to going to England?
No, Andrew. I have no concerns. I'm a positive person, and I just believe on you. Adhere to the protocols and, you know, wash your hands and do all the necessary things that, you know, you've been hearing for the last 6 months, then everything will be okay.
I'm going to let you go soon, Floyd, but can we win the series?
Yes, I think that we can win the series. You know, once we bat well, our bowling is never an issue. And we have guys that we have the number one all around the world, and Captain Jason Holder, Kimar Roach has been bowling well. You know, Shannon Gilbert's back, young Shamar Holder. He's a very, very good prospect. For the future, Azai Joseph, he's been bowling well, and Cornwall, those guys. So I think that once we bat well and catch well, then we'll be up. We'll be very competitive and win the series.
And no doubt, interesting how we're going to cope with the English conditions.
from what I've heard of my investigations, it's fairly sunny in England now. Obviously, the pitches, it's not a lot of cricket being cleared over the last 2 months, but I think the weather's good. The weather's good in England, and the pitches where we're playing at Old Trafford, that pitch is very good for batting as well. So I think that, you know, the conditions will not, you know, be a big issue. We know we're going to England. We know the ball can swing. So it's just a matter of making the adjustments, playing the ball underneath the eye level and as late as possible, building those partnerships and playing as a team.
Right. When did you get the call, and were you surprised you got the call to be the batting coach?
I got the call I think last week, Andrew. I was not really surprised, but I was just, like you said, I was doing some work at Kensington Nobles, you know, for the last 2 weeks with the boys. So following what's going on in COVID, you know, the borders in India, it's locked down stuff. So obviously, you know, Coach Phil Simmons asked me if I wanted to do the job. So I said yes. So obviously, that I'm thankful for the opportunity that Coach Simmons has given me, and he had the confidence in me as well. So it's just for me to go there and continue to do the job that I know I can do.
Well, of course, this is just short term, but overall, I would think that you would want to maybe work with the West Indies side on a long term basis. You know how I feel about you, Floyd. I think you've got a good heart. I think you're a good coach, and I would hope that perhaps sometime in the future this is long term.
Well, everything in time, Andrew. You know, I've had a taste of it already, and I'm positive that I'm going to be there again. You know, so I'm taking everything in stride. Right now, it's just this series coming up, so I'm going to put my best foot forward and make sure that the guys are prepared well and do my best.
Final question, Floyd. We've got a lot of people back in the Caribbean wishing these guys well, but of course, there are the concerns about COVID-19. What do you have to say as the batting coach of the West Indies side to the people of the Caribbean?
Well, Andrew, firstly, the COVID, you know, a lot of people are worried about the COVID situation, but I think the ECB has put a lot of things in place, put a lot of measures in place in order to keep us safe. When we get there, we're going to be in the bubble. So no one in, no one out. So I think that it's going to be safe. In terms of our batters, I think that, you know, we have some experienced batters. Craig Bassett, I hope those guys did well in England last time. Jason is batting well. Young Darish, again, I think that he's batting well. So Roston Chase, all these guys. So these guys are experienced cricketers now. So it's just a matter of us batting as a batting unit. You know, guys continue to understand each other's game and look out for each other.
Floyd, I want to thank you for coming through and talking to us on Mason and Guest.
Thank you very much, Sanjay.
All right. Well, thanks to you, Floyd. It was really a pleasure talking to you. Just before he went on the plane to go to Antigua and then, of course, on to England, he's there now. And we really appreciate giving your time to Mason and Guest. Of course, we heard from Sandy Roberts, John Moran, Roger Harper was absolutely brilliant towards the end. We had Wayne Lewis. We weren't able to touch base with Mervyn Dillon, Tony Gray, and Shane Chillingford, but it was great to hear from Keswick Williams. And of course, we also heard from Ian Bradshaw. I'm Andrew Mason. Here's hoping for a bright tomorrow. It's good night.